The following is a 1500 ESPN Twin Cities production.
Raised on basketball, raised in front of a computer screen, raised for covering the game, raised by Wolves. Now, talking all things Timberwolves with beat writer Derek James, here's Benny Hill with the Raised by Wolves podcast.
And not only will we be talking all things Timberwolves, we'll be talking a little Lynx, too.
This is the professional basketball podcast.
Yes, exactly.
This week, at least.
Lots to talk about. We don't have any games yet.
We have a lot of little things to talk about.
Yeah, we don't have any Wolves games to talk about yet, but that's coming in due time. We're less than a month away from that first game in San Antonio on October 18th. But here we are, and lots to talk about in regards to the Wolves. Lots of news, stuff breaking today, the day that we're taping this, and stuff sort of coming about over the last few days involving the Wolves. One of those things is Shabazz Muhammad is back, and he signs a one-year vet minimum deal. And so, I mean, the Wolves, obviously, they had some roster spots open, and they wanted to fill those spots with, you know, a wing player and, you know, potentially another point guard, and they filled that void too as well. And we'll talk about Aaron Brooks here in a little bit. But Shabazz is back, and I think, if anything, the fact that it's a guy that has already been playing here, there's familiarity, I think that will help too. But I think Shabazz is going to be in a situation where with Wiggins and Butler being the primary wings, I mean, Shabazz is really going to have to fight for some minutes, I would think.
Well, I mean, if you have Jamal Crawford too.
Yeah.
I mean, you look at, I mean, if for guys who, you know, who are doing the right things and know what to do, I think that gives Jamal Crawford probably a better shot if, you know, Shabazz isn't, you know, moving the ball like, you know, Tibbs wants him to, or, you know, not, you know, have playing his defensive assignments correctly. I think that's really going to factor into that too. But I think this could be a good year for Shabazz if he knows that, you know, he's playing for his next contract. I think this summer really backfired on not just him, but every restricted free agent on the market.
Yeah.
I mean, it was just a rotten summer to be a restricted free agent. So I think, yeah, if he comes in motivated, he's always been a hard worker. He's always worked on his body, getting stronger, leaning out, and all that stuff. Hashtag muscle watch. And, but I really do want to see him work on his game even more, because that's always the one thing that's really disappointed me, is that, yeah, he has that left hook that, you know, everyone knows and loves, but it's really his only move.
Yeah.
And, you know, we saw times last season where the league has that figured out. They know how to defend that. And you look for it, you go, well, if you had a step back jumper here to counter that, or if they knew that you were a threat to pass the ball once in a while,
mm-hmm.
you know, just those little things, I think, would go a long way towards, you know, increasing his value around the league and not being a free agent until, you know, early September.
Yeah. And we've talked about him too before, like, and I think it even goes back to when Steve was still with us. If Shabazz could sort of find a specialized niche, whether it's, you know, as a defender, which obviously there's some room for growth there on his end. But also as a knockdown three-point shooter, as a corner specialist three-point shooter, if he could add that to his game too, I mean, that's, you can't really put a price on that, especially for a team that doesn't really have, you know, a pure three-point shooter. If Shabazz can somehow find a way to be that, he can be very helpful.
Well, I still remember when Jalen Rose was helping out Grantland with their season preview stuff when Shabazz was coming out, and he was breaking down Shabazz's game film with Shabazz there. And you know, there was a shot that he took, you know, above the break. It might have been just like a catch and shoot or something like that. And he goes, you know, if you can hit that shot in the NBA consistently, you will be a max player.
Yeah.
And I still think it's true. Maybe not quite a max player, but at least a player who, you know, does very well for himself in that sense. I happen to have his numbers up here by chance.
Sure.
And, I mean, just his three-point percentages by month. In October, two games, granted, he missed his only three-point attempt he took. And then he shot 23% in November, 40% in December, 54% in January,
yeah,
and 34% in February, 12% in March, 18% in April. And this is really the up and down we've seen with Shabazz. There was one year a couple years ago where he actually did hit above 40. Or right at 40. And that's like, that's perfect. That's really what this team could really use. But we haven't seen that. I mean, we've also seen him hit, you know, 27% of his threes in a season. And we don't really know which player Shabazz is. And it really just varies year to year. And there's no consistency. So when you're looking at how you value a player like that, it's really tough, I think, to put a figure on his level of production and what you can expect from him year to year.
Yeah, I just think it's finding that consistency, and I think we'll get an idea of how consistent he is, because if he's struggling, I don't, you know, especially with Jamal Crawford here, like you said, I just don't think he'll see the floor as much. But if he comes in and he's hitting threes and he's doing a lot of little things, then, you know, he'll stay in the rotation. Tibbs won't sit him if he's being productive.
Well, especially since, you know, he's versatile and can play a couple different positions in the right lineups and with the right guys around him.
Aaron Brooks is also a Timberwolf that was announced today that they signed him. If you're not familiar with Aaron Brooks, he's played for a couple teams in the league. Primarily spent most of his career with the Houston Rockets, but he's played in a few other places. I think he had to stop in Sacramento, too, if I'm not mistaken. Maybe.
Houston, Phoenix, Chicago, Sacramento, and Indiana last year.
Yep.
And that's not in chronological order. That's just as it came to my brain.
Yeah, and it's funny when they signed him and looked, and I was like, oh yeah, he was in Indiana last year, backing up Jeff Teague.
Yeah. So when you said on the ride that he was only 32, I'm like, that cannot be right. And I looked at it, and he played 4 years at Oregon, and he came out as a 23-year-old. So that is actually true.
Yeah, and I mean, I look at it like this. I know that there's a lot of I saw on Twitter when the news broke today that, you know, there's a lot of, well, what about Tyus sort of takes? And I understand it, but, you know, I think in a situation like this, you need depth. And heaven forbid anything happened to Jeff Teague. I mean,
or Tyus for that matter.
Or Tyus for that matter. Yeah, I mean, you just need, if you don't sign Aaron Brooks and something happens to Jeff Teague, then Tyus is your only option. And then you're looking around and saying, where are we going to find another ball handle?
You're going to go to the D-League, a guy who doesn't know how to play in the NBA, or the G-League, excuse me?
Right.
Well, the funny thing is I looked at their numbers, and I mean, aside from both being, Tyus is 6'2", Brooks is 6 foot even, they're really similar numbers. I mean, they're counting stats. I mean, Tyus Jones averaged 7.7 assists more in almost the same minutes, about 13, 14 minutes.
Yeah.
Their rebounds were the same, 1.1 a game. The interesting thing was down to their efficiency. I mean, Aaron Brooks knocked down 37.5% of his threes on two attempts, which is good, which is fine for, you know, your second, third point guard. Mm-hmm. Tyus Jones, 35.6. And, I mean, so they're pretty similar players at this point. You would hope that Tyus would get better, obviously, and outplay a 32-year-old Aaron Brooks. But, I mean, they're very similar. I mean, you can almost have your Spider-Man meme, the two Spider-Men.
They're pointing at each other.
Yeah. And I looked at it, it's like, wow, they really are very similar players. And you kind of wonder, too, like, is, you know, Tyus's ceiling, if that wouldn't be, like, you know, a more distributing Aaron Brooks.
Yeah.
At some point out, could he average 19 points a game? I mean, well, that would depend on his role, but I'm not so sure about that. I feel like they're a little different, but, yeah, I think I'm fine with it. I mean, it's hard to really complain about a move like this.
Yeah, and I think we have to be careful to not, I don't want to say overanalyze, but we have to, because I know a lot of people are, you know, they're seeing and they're hearing names and all this out here. And I mean, we got to remember the core of this team is already set right now.
Yeah.
We've got, you know, Jimmy, Wiggins, who we'll get to in just a second here. Cat, obviously, you've got Teague here as well. You know, the primary, the guys who are going to get the heavy minutes are already set in place. And now at this point, you're just looking for, you know, rotation guys to sort of plug into different roles and just, you know, to spell your primary players. So, I mean, we're kind of at a point now where beggars really can't really be choosers at this point.
I mean,
there
are no sexy names left on the market anyway. Like,
right.
Who else are you getting? I mean, in the worst case, I mean, you have him also for veteran. I hate to say veteran leadership. The words were so hard to leave my mouth because it's such a cliche.
Royce's going to listen to this and he's like, leadership.
I mean, he knows Tibbs' offense and system.
Right. Yeah.
He knows where to be. I mean, he can help guide too. Not that Jeff Teague needs much guidance at this point in his career from, you know, from that standpoint. But I think, you know, for having him around Tyus Jones, being also another smaller guy and, you know, being a little different, I think that there's, you know, a lot that Tyus can take too, you know, in his own development.
So Aaron Brooks is here. Shabazz is back. Another big news. It sounds like Andrew Wiggins is it's not official yet, I don't think. But
can we talk about this?
Yeah, go
ahead. Just the sourcing on this. So our very own Darren Doogie Wolfson has been talking about Wiggins signing this 5-year, $148 million deal for, I don't know, weeks probably.
Forever.
And then apparently John Krasinski had been talking about it forever too on his own podcast.
Yeah.
And then Cham Serenia of The Vertical tweets about it today, and all of a sudden everyone's talking about it again.
Yeah.
And it's like, hold on. Our guys were first.
Yeah. our guys have been all over this for a while. We know what the years are. We know what the total amount of the contract is. But it does seem as though it's pretty close to being a done deal.
I guess part of the delay was Wiggins switching agents.
Yeah.
Which kind of makes sense, but I don't think he needs an agent to sign that.
Right, yeah. But, yeah, and again, I mean, you know, people are going to have their opinions about it, and, oh, you know, is Andrew Wiggins worth this? I mean, the idea...
He's absolutely not worth that right now, but contracts aren't given out for current production. They're given out for expected future production.
Right, exactly. This contract, this is the economics of the NBA and where the league is at right now. Players are making a lot of money, and... You know, I mean, this is what, like you said, this is based on what he is projected to be. This is what the Wolves are hoping, that eventually when Andrew Wiggins reaches his peak, he's going to be a guy that is totally worth $30 million a year.
Well, and you look at this franchise, and it kind of comes back to beggars can't be choosers. What else are you going to do with this money? You're not going to go out and sign another guy who right now is worth $28 million a year, whatever this sum is.
Right.
It's really, you know, our best bet. We look for guys like this who can become great players. We haven't seen a lot of those come along often, especially at Andrew's position. And I think having Jimmy, you know, and forcing Wiggins down to the shooting guard where he's had a lot of success. Because you put him against those smaller guys, and he's a bit of a nightmare.
Especially when they post him up.
If they're going to start putting the bigger guy on him and you give Jimmy the smaller guy, I think Jimmy will take that all day long, too.
Pack a lunch. Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things where, like you said, what else are you going to do with the money at this point? And again, I mean, you got in a league where, you know, all due respect to him, but in a league where Ryan Anderson is making $20 million, and you know, you have other guys that are making that too.
And at least Ryan Anderson's probably as good as he's ever going to be.
Yeah.
Andrew Wiggins can at least get better.
Ryan Anderson's, what, 28, 29 years old at this point?
Yeah, about
maybe,
there.
Maybe 30.
With a good amount of injury history too.
Yeah. Well, and that's the other thing too, is if Andrew had a shaky injury history, then I could maybe understand a little bit more of the angst.
Be more like the Pekovic contract.
Yeah. Or, I mean, you look at the Warriors, obviously were able to sign Steph to a pretty team-friendly contract because they were worried, there was concern over his ankles, and obviously that...
You know, and they've been making money hand over fist on that deal ever since.
Yes, exactly. but, yeah, I mean, if Andrew had some sort of a lingering injury for the last 3 years and then they sign him to a deal like this, then I can understand, like, I don't know, you know, type of thing. But he's been about as healthy as you can expect a young player to be in his first, you know, 3 years in the league. So, hey, you know, it's
and
fine.
People made the on-court comparison, the production comparison to Rudy Gay. But this really does remind me when Rudy Gay signed his first extension with Memphis, and it was like, Rudy Gay got how much? And the funny thing is, I think it was like $15 million a year, which is just jump change now.
Right.
Because what did Taj get? 2 years, 28
Taj
million?
Taj got two and 28.
Yeah. I mean, it's just funny how much the money has changed with the TV deal. But I mean, these things always come about. And sometimes, yeah, Rudy Gay, he's a fine player. I mean, I think there are a lot of questions about his game, but he's improved since, you know, leaving Memphis and Toronto, I think, ultimately is where he got a lot better. But I think, yeah, Andrew's going to get better. And it's not like he's Anthony Bennett or, you know, an extreme case like that. So,
right. Yeah. Okay. So we put out, we tweeted out today.
We were thinking about questions, and you know what's more fun than questions? Hot takes.
Hot takes. Yes. We love the hot takes. We probably won't play this like we do on the Ride with Royce, where it's a piping hot, it's a hot take, a piping hot take, and a scalding hot take. I don't want to steal the bit from.
I just figured we'd read them out and just talk about them.
Yeah. So we've got a few early on. This one is from Chris Swanson. Belly will become the best player off the bench and become a dark horse sixth man candidate. That's a pretty hot take there.
Belly seems like a nice guy. I really would love to believe this and be so happy for him. He's just so passive and timid, and he has just like the weirdest injuries that just keep him from really being great. And people talk about him like, you know, oh, well, he can be a stretch four. He can't shoot.
If you look at his three-point shooting numbers, they haven't been...
Even his field goal numbers total, they're not good, overall.
I think his first year, he shot, what, maybe 37, 38% maybe from three?
About there.
And then last year, I think it went down to like 30 or 31. I mean, he struggled as a three-point shooter, but yeah. Belly is another one of those guys, especially with Taj there and with Gorgie there, you know. I mean, even with, you know, a guy like Cole Aldrich there, with, you know, there's a lot of depth in terms of big guys for this roster, and you know, Belly's really going to have to, if he's going to contribute, he's going to have to really fight for some minutes and really stand out.
Well, I think just for that overall bench status, I mean, that six-man role is still entirely up for grabs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Jamal Crawford, I mean, you figure right now it probably has the inside track on that. But, I mean, Shabazz Muhammad's right there. I mean, who knows? I mean, Tyus Jones could have another solid year.
Aaron Brooks.
I mean, the funny thing, quick side note on Tyus Jones. I looked at his numbers. All the counting stats are pretty similar. The minutes aren't a lot different. But the biggest difference I saw was that his shooting numbers ticked up to a respectable number. And the attempts were about the same, so the only real difference was that they were going in. And maybe he was just getting better shots, but the real difference between year one and two seemed to be just that his shots were going in. And I do have Bielitsa's numbers here. Yeah, 38.4 his first year from three on two attempts, and then 31.6 last year on almost three. So it's not a great sign when you see the volume increase and the efficiency decrease.
Yeah.
But his two-point efficiency dropped from 56.4 as a rookie down to 53.1. And those aren't really great signs to see. And he did struggle with some injuries. But the other thing is, he's missed, let's see, 17. He's missed 39 games in 2 years. He has to stay on the floor.
Yeah, he's got to stay healthy.
If he's going to be that guy, they need him more than 60, 65 games a year.
From James Murphy, who is actually a weekend producer for us here at 1500 ESPN, he tweeted a hot take at us. Andrew Wiggins will be more instrumental in a Wolves NBA Finals appearance in the next 5 years than either Cat or Jimmy Butler.
I could actually see this as not being that hot.
Yeah.
I might have to explain myself real quick.
Sure.
So you look at it, I mean, you figure the next 5 years, Jimmy Butler is going to be early, mid-30s-ish, somewhere in there. Cat, I mean, he's probably going to be a great player, but there's really a chance for Andrew Wiggins to grow as a player and to really build on his skills and become that third piece that really takes the pressure off the other two guys.
Yeah.
I mean, like, you look at this Lynx team right now, for example. Part of why they have been so difficult to defend and why they are so hard to defend in general is that they have 5-6 players on any given night who can hurt you.
Mm-hmm.
You double one and you're leaving yourself wide open for it. It's like, it's pick your poison. So, I mean, if Wiggins develops into that player, he can be the more relied upon and Jimmy can slide into more of that third role guy as he gets a little older. I mean, probably still a productive and effective player, but I mean, Andrew could really have the opportunity to get in there and make a big difference. So I could see that, especially in a playoff environment when you need to just throw the ball to someone and say, go get a bucket.
Yeah, and I look at, and this is kind of an example we've kind of fallen back on a few times, but and the circumstances are a little bit different. But look at Joe Johnson for the Jazz in the playoffs.
Yes,
I mean, was Joe Johnson the Jazz's best player this past season?
Not by a long shot.
Not at all. You know, you still had Rudy Gobert and Gordon Hayward and George Hill and all those guys, but Joe Johnson played a specific role, and I'm not saying that it's, you know, a situation with Wiggins would be a mirror image of this, but even if a guy is not your absolute best player, he can do things on a playoff run that where you look back on and you say, boy, if they didn't get that from him, there was no way they advance.
Well, was Andre Iguodala the best player on that 15 Warriors team?
He won finals MVP.
But he pestered LeBron.
Yes.
And LeBron still had a good to great series, but he passed for LeBron, took shots away from him when there were no other options, and he played well on the offensive end.
He made LeBron, and this is why, because I know there was always that case, and we're kind of going off track here a little bit, but remember there was the case for LeBron to get the Finals MVP, even though the Cavs lost in six in that series, which I kind of understood, because at that point it was LeBron and like. The next best player was what? J.R. Smith? Because Love was hurt. Kyrie got hurt.
Oh, and J.R. lost a shot that series too, I think.
Yeah. So I can understand it. But if you look at that series and you look at the way Andre Iguodala had to make, like LeBron had great numbers at the end of the series, but he had to work for those numbers. It's from a scoring standpoint, you look at his efficiency numbers in that series. LeBron didn't really shoot the ball that well that series, and it was because Andre Iguodala was making his life a living hell.
And LeBron had to take 16 difficult shots per game.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. So that's why Andre Iguodala was the Finals MVP. And I'm a big Andre Iguodala fan, so of course I'm going to make a case for him winning that MVP and defend him. Anyway. Zach says Teague will be second in the league in assists behind Rubio. I think this is a pretty hot take, and I'll tell you why.
There are a lot of really good point guards out there.
There are a lot of really good point guards out there, and I don't think, and this is not in no way a shot at Jeff Teague at all. I think, if anything, this is going to mean a good thing for the team as a whole. I don't think we're going to see Jeff Teague get a lot of us. Like, he had, what, almost eight a game with Indiana last year?
Was it even that much? I thought it was closer to 6.5, 7.
It might have been. But either way, I don't think we're going to see Jeff Teague get a lot of assists. He's not going to have 15, 16 assist games like Rubio did, because I think just the way they're going to operate offensively, the ball's going to be so free-flowing that they're not going to be relying on Jeff Teague to make all the plays for the offense. You're going to have Jimmy Butler out there facilitating as well, and hopefully some of those habits spill onto Wiggins as well, and he becomes more of a playmaker too. So I don't think we're going to see Jeff Teague really get a lot of double-digit assist games where you're like, oh, Jeff Teague had 15 points and 13 assists.
I think it'll be hard for him too. I mean, just because you're going to have so many other ball handlers as well.
Right.
I don't know that he'll be used in the traditional, okay, I'm the point guard, I bring the ball up the floor, and I distribute.
Right.
I feel like, you know, with Butler and Wiggins, and heck, you can run the offense through Cap because he's become such a good passer from having to pass out of so many double teams. There are just so many more offensive weapons in there if he was using that traditional role, but I think we're going to see maybe a little jarring to see a point guard who is a little more of a shoot first and who maybe who gets more action run to him rather than having it run from him, so.
Josh says Cat will be an all-NBA defensive he'll be on an all-NBA defensive team in 2018.
This is potentially not crazy because he was fine his first year, especially for a rookie. Last year he regressed. I think if the team has a good year, I think that's always a big factor, is team play in that. Yeah. But also how Cat does and how his reputation is. If he makes an all-star team, you know, and he's a 24 and, I don't know, 12, 13, 14 rebound guy a game.
It's two blocks a game.
And there's just a lot of, you know, there's a lot of momentum and hype around Cat and the team. Yeah. I think it could be easy for voters to get swept up in this. What I like about what Josh did here is that he did not say what team. So he could be second team. Is there 13?
Second team.
Is there 13?
I think there's only two.
I thought so. Okay. Teams, yeah. So yeah, he could be second team and that still counts. And that would still fulfill this. So that one's a little less hot.
Yeah, I mean, he would have to.
It's probably unlikely, though, with Gobert and the other
competition. Gobert and DJ, and yeah. So it will probably be Whiteside will get votes just because he's always getting blocks and everything.
And
but
we're slowly moving away from voters who just vote based on shot blocking, like Marcus Camby 5-ish years ago.
Right. On the Prowl says, LaVar Ball will try to recruit Tom Thibodeau as the face of the Big Baller brand after the Wolves beat down of the Lakers on Christmas Day. Or Christmas night, I guess, in the case of.
So that must mean that Thibodeau would be another alpha male like LaVar Ball.
Could you picture Tibbs with like a Big Baller brand shirt on? Oh my gosh. Just picture that for a second.
I hope he wears the Big Baller Ram bow tie. I would be okay with that.
Yeah. Boy. That'll be that would definitely be interesting. Rory says, love the podcast, fellas. My hot take, Wolves move both first round picks and Cole many weeks prior to the deadline for high end veterans.
They might need more salary than that to get Melo, but that's just my thought.
Well, I think they can't, their own pick, they can't move it, right? Because they still owe it to Atlanta.
They could do a 2021, I think, is as soon as they can move a pick.
Yeah. And of course, they could still move the OKC.
Which is kind of a poo poo buffet when you have, hey, OKC's pick, which would probably be like, I don't know, mid to early 20s, mid to low 20s, and then a future pick. But hey, if they can do it, more power to them.
Peter Schmidt says, Baz will average 3 assists per game while running into fewer charges. Jamal as the mentor.
Oh, I missed the last sentence the first time I read this because I got swept up in Baz assists, which are my favorite.
I saw you reply to that, too.
So I think Shabazz only had 9 or 6 assists his rookie year total. And as I told you, Shabazz assists are just my favorite thing in the world because they don't happen a lot. It's a lot like eclipses. And then we all freak out. So, fun thing about Shabazz Muhammad and his career assist numbers, he averages 0.6 assists in an average of 18.5 minutes a game, but he takes 7.7 shots a game. So, to get you an idea of how big of a jump this would be, last season he did not have 10 assists in any month.
Mm.
Not in any one month. And just going month by month, he had 5 in the first 15 games of the season. He had 7 in 15 games in December. He had 5 in 14 games in January, 9 in February. And in the remaining 22 games, he had 9.
Yeah.
That would be awesome, though. I would be so happy to see that. Get rid of some of those bad shots, those contested left hooks that everyone knows is coming, and get some more guys involved. But averaging 3 in those minutes would be impressive, but he'd also play more minutes if he moved the ball. So I think that'd probably be a good team. I mean, that the team was playing well.
From Matt, Zach LaVine will have a better year than Jeff Teague. I don't think this means anything, and I don't believe it, but I like saying words. I think, now do we know, is that going to be ready by the time, in time for the season?
I don't think we know yet. I know before he left that he was apparently doing pretty well.
Mm-hmm. Like he was ahead of schedule, it sounded like.
Yeah. I don't think he'll – well, maybe – I don't know. He could hit the ground running. What do I know?
Because it happened in – the knee happened in what?
March.
Was it March?
Early March or late February.
I think it might have been late February.
It was pretty close.
Because it was at Detroit, right?
Yes.
At the Detroit game. I think Zach's going to have a really, really good year with Chicago. He might start a little bit slow, you know, out of the gate, just – you know,
to steal Kenny and on that team, to steal Kenny Smith's term, be a looter and a riot. There are going to be so many shots available for him. He can just do whatever he wants. I had to preface that with Kenny Smith's phrase because I said that on Twitter one time, and someone's like, "Whoa, Derek, you can't say that. That's bad." I'm like, "No, no, 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 no."
Don't mean it in that context. No. I think Zach's going to have a really good year for the Bulls. I don't think the Bulls are going to be very good. I mean, the Bulls have like 60 losses written all over them.
I don't know if they're going to be worse than the Hawks or not. It's hard to tell.
Yeah, but I do think Zach, from a number standpoint, is going to have a pretty good year because there's going to be plenty of opportunities for him to score.
They're just such different players, too. It's like, better year in what sense?
Right.
I like both players, though.
Yeah, I think that.
Oh, no, we got a couple. I got a couple more, too.
Got a couple more? Okay.
Yep. Let's see. Oh, here we go. All right, from Jesse Silbaugh. Cat firmly establishes himself as a top 5 player in the NBA. Hmm. I mean, you figure he's probably doing that if he's making an all-defensive team.
Yeah, I mean.
That's really, I think, the missing piece at this point, right? We know he can score. We know he can rebound. He's a decent passer. I think he has to get a little better for that.
Think about if Think about all the players that he would leapfrog, though, if he becomes a top five player. I mean, that means you're putting him in LeBron, Steph, KD, Kawhi.
You're probably saying he's better than Brow then, right?
Yeah. Which I think is possible. I think it's possible for him to surpass Anthony Davis.
Especially if he's healthy.
Yeah. But he's passing...
If Kat's healthy, I should say.
Yeah. But he's passing James Harden. He's passing Russ. Yeah.
It's a good list. Well, how far is that now? Because, I mean, you look at... Granted, the rankings are meaningless, and I never really pay attention to them, but I did see a lot of them were coming in with Kat right around that 10 to 15 range.
Yeah, I know the ESPN rankings had him at 12. They had Jimmy at 10.
I think SI had them.
Kat at 12.
Had Jimmy and Kat at 11 and 13 in some order. I forget. So it's not a wild jump, but it'd be an impressive one for sure.
Yeah. But he's, I mean, obviously he has all the potential to get there. It's just, I guess, it's just a matter if he gets there this year or not. Yeah, so thanks to, is that it?
I got one more from Nick Hagen.
One more? Okay.
It's a good lukewarm one to calm us down. It's like a cool down after your workout. Wiggins will be less efficient this year as a third option than Zach was last year as a third option. I mean, I don't think that Andrew Wiggins is as good of a shooter as Zach LaVine, so I think that's going to play a part of it.
Sure.
It all kind of depends, too, on if the offense changes, because you look at the way Jimmy plays, and I don't know that you can have two wings on the floor at the same time playing a significant amount of minutes, taking up the same spot on the floor.
Yeah, I tend to think, though, and this is no disrespect to Zach, but I just feel like Jimmy Butler being on the floor will make things easier for Andrew Wiggins
mm-hmm.
to score and thus making him more efficient.
Well, I think Jimmy, too, is a smarter player.
Yeah.
And I think that in itself can put more pressure on defenses when, you know, a guy's in the right place and you know that you're not going to be able to goad them into a stupid mistake as easily.
Right.
And, I mean, that's just experience, too. Nothing on Zach there.
Okay.
Fun.
Yeah, that was fun. Thanks for the hot takes, folks. We appreciate that. All right, we got to talk about this Charles Barkley thing before we get to the links. Here's my thing with Charles. I find him entertaining, and I watch Inside the NBA primarily because it's more of a, okay, I want to see what Charles says next mm-hmm. type of thing.
Or Shaq to clown him about not having any rings.
Right, yeah. And that's always fun. And, you know, Kenny has some fun with it, too, because Kenny was kind of a role player when he won his two titles, but he has two titles and Charles doesn't. So Kenny can always rub that in his face. But I'm starting to get a little annoyed with sort of this old school versus new school stuff by former players versus current players in the NBA. And we kind of saw it a little bit with Oscar Robertson two seasons ago now, with, you know, Steph having that out-of-his-mind MVP season in 2016.
Oscar Robertson grumpy? Why, I never.
But it's just, I mean, these guys have got to understand, and basically what we're talking about, if you haven't heard, I'm sure if you're listening, you have heard already, but, you know, Charles... You know, had some words to say about, you know, the NBA, you know, expanding the season in terms of spreading out the games and eliminating a lot of the back-to-backs. And, you know, I'm just getting tired of this. Well, you know, we played back in the day where, you know, the guys were tougher back then and the game was more physical and, you know, we didn't sit out games and all this other stuff. And it's like, okay, but you're 50 and you're limping. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, these guys are trying to not be at that age and walking around. And the fact that you have people on social media that are like, yeah, you know, Charles is right. And yeah, you know, these guys aren't tough anymore. And it's like, come on, man.
Was it the 88 or 87 finals when Kevin McHale played on a broken foot?
Yeah.
And he held off surgery so that he could play. And now he hobbles.
Yeah. Look at Phil Jackson. I mean, has anybody ever watched Phil Jackson walk in the last 8 years, 8, 9 years? I mean, Phil.
That's part of why he had to stop coaching, too, I think.
Yeah. I mean, he basically, when the Lakers had talked to him about coming back, he basically said, I didn't want to travel with the team. I only wanted to coach in home games. Like, I mean, it's and I understand if you play a professional sport, there's always going to be, if you play it for a long time, if you play it for 10 plus years, there's always going to be a few lingering effects, no matter what you do, because mm-hmm. it is, you know, you're taxing your body. But to take shots at these current guys who are like, you know, look, I want to be able to walk. I want to be able to walk normally when I'm 40 and done playing. I mean, I
want to be able to play with my kids when I'm done. You know, yeah, I want to be able to stand and clap at their graduation. I mean, little things like that.
I just think it's wrong to do that. And for somebody like Charles too, that who without question, if he were still a player today, would not be complaining about back to backs being eliminated. No, mm-hmm. like no former player would be complaining about that if they were playing today. Would be complaining like, no, I don't. No, don't stretch the season out. You know, we want to play on back to backs. Like. Stop lying. No, you wouldn't.
Four games and five nights.
Five games and eight nights. Let's do it. Like, no, come on,
man. Well, you remember the point we were at just 3-4 years ago where we were having star injuries constantly.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, this sucks. I didn't come to watch Eric Maynor. I want to watch Russell Westbrook. But yes. He's out with an overuse injury. Like, I mean, it's better, I think, for the league as a whole to have their stars on the court. And if they can curb those annoying things where, you know, teams are resting players
right.
on games. I mean, you look at, you know, the fans who travel and you hear stories about them, you know, not being able to see their favorite player because they're taking a rest night. And a lot of those are schedule related. And this is a great way to, you know, hopefully curb that.
And hopefully, too, by the time you get to the playoffs, because you had so many people complaining about the quality of basketball in the playoffs, if you have guys that aren't as worn down by the time April rolls around, you're going to see better basketball in the playoffs too. Mm-hmm. So I don't know. I'm just getting really tired of we keep seeing this with the former players who, look, I get it. There are some all-time great players who deserve like all the respect in the world for being the great players that they were and all of that. But I'm just getting tired of seeing so many of these guys that are just, you know, the straw man argument of, yeah, you know, back, you know, they weren't tough like we were. And it's like, the game is different now. And you would, if you had an opportunity to play in today's game, you would take it in a heartbeat.
And it's an argument that you can't prove because exactly. How do you judge toughness? Like, there was no metric for toughness. But I think one of the funniest things with Barkley is saying these poor babies can't play back-to-back games. And this kind of plays in the point. Tom Ziller of SB Nation.
I saw this, yes, this was great.
He goes, from age 27 on, Barkley averaged fewer than 70 games per season, even excluding his 20-game farewell season.
99, 2000, I think it was, yeah.
Yeah, and I'm looking at it now. After his rookie year, he didn't play in 82 games. He played 82 times after that. He didn't play 70 games again. No, he did play 70. He played 70 games in a season once after the age of 29.
And age 29 would have probably been his MVP year, Phoenix, 92-93. That might have been his age 30 year.
76. That was 29, yeah.
Okay.
Age 30 was the next year when he played 65.
Yeah, well.
Then from there, I mean, he went from 71, 95, 96 with Phoenix to 53, 68, to 42, to 20 when he blew out his quad for good. And part of that, I mean, maybe Barkley wasn't the kind of guy who, you know, was really, you know, in the gym, you know, treating his body like a temple.
Well, we all know that.
So, I mean, that plays a role in that, too. But I think if you can have, you know, the schedule at least be accommodating to that, I think it's ultimately better for all of us. Once you get that macho BS, you know, and just, you know, the hyper-masculinity nonsense out of it, and you just look at it like this could really improve the quality of the game over the season.
And can we stop bringing player salaries into these conversations? It doesn't matter.
No.
Like, I don't care. Like, you know, Chuck had the one quote, you know, these poor babies can't play back-to-back games. And they're making $20, $30, $40 million a year, but we want to make it convenient for them. So, because you're LeBron or you're Steph Curry and you're making $30 million a year, you know, you have to play, you should be playing back to back.
This isn't Fear Factor or the Gauntlet or something.
Like, what does that even mean? I don't understand that.
Well, and you'd think too, I mean, okay, fine. Let's look at this. I mean, if you're paying someone $20-30 million, don't you want to make sure that they stay healthy, they stay on the floor?
Right.
And so that your fans and your customers, ultimately is what you're after here, can actually see them, spend money at your games. You retain season ticket members. You add season ticket members. There's a lot of benefits for this.
And not everybody in the NBA is making $30, $40 million a year.
Yeah, exactly.
So are you saying, well, the $30 million a year guys, they should have to play the back-to-back games. But, you know, if you're over here and you're making 2.5, you know, you can rest.
Yeah.
You can rest. Like, what are you talking about? I don't understand.
Brandon Rush, you take your time, sir.
Yeah. Yeah. You take your time off.
You've
yeah.
had a hard night.
Yeah. So I just had to get that off my chest. Overall, I'm fine with Charles. He's entertaining and he's funny sometimes, but that was just, I'm just getting really sick of that whole thing from like the old school guys that it's just,
it's never ending.
Yeah.
I don't know why we keep asking former players about stuff. Yeah. Probably because it gets clicks and people talk about it on podcasts.
Right. Exactly. Okay. One last thing before we get out here. The Lynx are right back in the finals again. I think this is the sixth trip.
Sixth time in since 2011.
Years. Yeah. Sixth time in seven seasons. It's another matchup with the Sparks. A little revenge there, potentially.
And last season's finals was amazing.
It was incredible, and I think it was great for the league because you got the two best teams duking it out for in a series that went the distance, went the full five games, and the game five itself was terrific.
It came down to the buzzer.
Yeah,
it's hard to beat that.
It's hard to beat that, and I think it really worked out well for the league itself as a whole.
Well, playoff viewership is up this year.
Yeah.
And that's no surprise.
Yeah, so the Lynx are back in the finals against the Sparks, and you've been covering the Lynx now in the playoffs.
Yeah, I got...
how's that been going?
Howard Megdahl, he runs Summit Hoops, which is a fan-sided women's basketball site.
Mm-hmm.
And I talked to him about doing stuff earlier because I have a Lynx credential.
Mm-hmm.
And that never really panned out. So the regular Lynx guy, Mike Peden, he stepped away to take care of other things. And I got to cover a couple games in the playoffs. And, I mean, it's one thing that's really kind of clear to see is that these really are the two best teams.
Yeah.
I mean, in the WNBA, you have your Lynx, you have the Sparks as, you know, your tier one. Below that, the Mystics, as talented as they were, they had, you know, the most unfortunate season. They are, you know, tier two right in there with Phoenix. And everything really shook out the way that it should.
Yeah.
And you know, you think about the way we talk about the NBA. Oh, well, it's always, you know, one or two teams can win it every year. Because they're the best teams. It feels like in basketball, it lends itself to really the cream rising to the top. And, well, the nice thing, too, with this, I mean, this could be a very historic table-setting finals, too.
Yeah.
Because the Lynx and the Sparks each have three titles as a franchise, which the fourth, whoever gets the fourth, will tie the Houston Comets for the most in franchise history. And it's ridiculous, by the way, that the Comets are no longer around.
Yeah.
And they're the team with the most titles. So whoever wins, will put themselves in position to win a fifth. You also have four of the last five MVPs in league history, Candace Parker, Nneka Ogumike, Sylvia Fowles, and Maya Moore.
Yep. And of course, Sylvia won this year.
Yep. So there are a ton of talent in this series. And, I mean, it's just really fantastic basketball in there, too. And, I mean, the Lynx, too, have a chance to solidify themselves as really the third dynasty in league history. Because you had the Comets that won the first four. You had the Shock, I think, who won two or three titles. But they went to six finals in a long stretch. No, not quite six. It was a good amount, though. And they're really the second dynasty in league history. So the Lynx could really, you know, solidify themselves as one of the greatest teams. And I just saw, too, that they are actually the most popular team as far as merchandise sales goes in the WNBA. So that's pretty neat.
Pretty,
I mean,
awesome.
It's good stuff to get excited about, especially if you're just itching for real basketball. I mean, this is just going to be a fantastic series to get into it with.
Yeah, and if last year's series is any indication of what we're going to see, I mean, it's... I think we're in for another barn burner. What's it been? How's it been at Williams Arena? Has the crowd been?
It's loud.
Yeah,
it is really loud.
I've been in. I mean, I obviously I didn't get a chance to go for Lynx games, but I've been in there numerous times for Gopher men's basketball, And if that place, you pack that place with just the way it's constructed and the way the roof is, and it can get pretty loud in that place. So it's good to see that people came out.
It was funny when the night that Sylvia Fowles won the MVP award, accepted the MVP award, that was game two.
Was it game two? Okay.
Yeah, because I missed game one. And Lindsay and Sylvia are up at the podium, and Lindsay goes, "Hey, Sylvia, you know why it's so loud? Because it's the barn." And then she wanted to explain the dynamics of the roof and how that just reflects noise.
That's awesome. Well, good luck to the Lynx.
Begins Sunday.
I think they tip off at 2:30. Yep. I think it's on ABC, right? Is it on ABC or ESPN?
One of the two. Check local listings.
Yeah, check your local listings. It's going to be a great series. Good luck to the Lynx. Hoping the Lynx can pull it out, of course.
It's an odd year, too. They've won 11, 13,
that's right.
15.
17. Makes perfect sense. Thanks to everyone who submitted Wolves Hot Takes for this week. Thanks to you for listening. You can find the Raised by Wolves podcast. Of course, you can subscribe to us on iTunes. Just search Raised by Wolves. Give us a favorable rating. And, of course, you can find us at podcastone.com. And, of course, 1500ESPN.com as well. We're less than a month away from the Wolves starting up the basketball that counts. And, of course, the Lynx are playing some basketball that counts, too, starting on Sunday. For Derek James, I'm Manny Hill. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next time.